Hey everyone, it's your girl Carly Jones, and this is Makeup and Murder. Welcome back to episode 4, part 2 of Makeup and Murder of the Laura Bible and Ashley Freeman case. But before I get into that, I want to discuss my favorite beauty product of the week. And let me tell you, I am a huge, huge stickler when it comes to concealer. My skin is super dry. I need something creamy. I need something with moisture. So this one really came as a huge surprise for me. ColourPop is an amazing brand. I love their eyeshadows. When they came out with foundations and concealers, I was a little bit iffy because I need that extra moisture. I jumped on it. I was like, you know what? Let me try this concealer from ColourPop. And like I said, it's the ColourPop Pretty Fresh Creamy Concealer. And let me tell you guys, it is a game changer. If you are dry skin like me, this is super creamy, super beautiful. It doesn't crease underneath my eye. It is simply amazing. On my social medias, I will go ahead and tag a link so you can click on this and check it out yourself. It is just simply amazing. If you're dry skin and you have issues with creasing underneath your eyes and you're just not getting enough moisture in your concealer, give this one a go. Now that the makeup is out of the way, let's go ahead and get into part 2 of the Bible Freeman case. You ready? All right, you guys, let's go ahead and get into part 2 of the Laura Bible and Ashley Freeman case. So we ended off part 1 with a huge break in the case in May of 2002. So moving on, the Bibles get information from the OSBI that they have this man who is currently in prison that says he knows something about the girls and had apparently told the OSBI that he had done it. Now, what drives me insane to the point with chills is that this area appears to be a stomping ground for violent criminals, and they seem to all be operating within a 30-mile radius. Numbers of unsolved murders in the area actually reveal quite a few of serial killers that have actually passed through the Welsh area. So, the first one we have to discuss is Tommy Lynn Sells, who at that point was actually on death row in Texas. Authorities have actually linked Sells to at least 16 murders. You heard that right. 16 murders across the country. The letter to the Globe, postmarked May 10th, states that during an interview back in March of 2002, Tommy Sells says he was involved in the disappearance of the Freemans and the Laura Bible. The letter goes on to say that he was currently staying at a home near Welsh, Oklahoma, about 30 miles northwest of Joplin, Missouri. He says, quote, he went blind, unquote, during the killings and had difficulty remembering the details. Quote, what do I remember about December 30th? Sells wrote, unquote. Quote, I want to say this. I remember where two bodies are. Well, I believe I could take you to two bodies. I also want to remember a fire, unquote. Oddly enough, I was reading a little more into Mr. Tommy Sells, and according to newson6.com, an article that was posted on May 15, 2002 says that Sells was arrested for a fatal stabbing of a 13-year-old Kayleen Harris of Del Rio, Texas on December 31, 1999. Kayleen's friend Crystal Surlis, who said to be 10 years old at the time, was sleeping over at Kayleen's home and had actually survived the attack and was able to identify Tommy as the killer. You rarely hear about that. Wow, sounds familiar to this case, doesn't it? Two of that young girls, not to mention Kayleen, was murdered just one day after Laura and Ashley went missing. Now, it may seem a little far-fetched since the case was out of Texas, but Sells was actually known for hopping from state to state just killing people. Authorities also believe Sells is responsible for murders in Missouri, Illinois, Oklahoma, Kentucky, Tennessee, West Virginia, Arizona, and Nevada. Wow. His most gruesome crime may be the 1987 slaying of 4 members of the Darden family in Illinois, including an infant born during the beating of his mother. Oh my gosh. Can you believe that? The investigator on Sells' case at the time said, quote, he did not know if Sells was telling the truth about the Welsh murders, but the chance he may be involved made police take him very seriously, unquote. It was said that, quote, it is difficult to know when Sells is telling the truth, and he has sometimes contradicted himself, unquote. Well, does this remind you of anyone? Do you remember? So the OSBI goes to meet with Tommy Sells so they can question him, and they pull him from his Texas cell so he can lead them to where he stated he disposed of the bodies. It has been nearly 3 years since the incident happened, and they have this man who is confessing to the crimes, and they feel that they have finally found something concrete. More and more information arises, and they think, wow, we have finally got him. Now, Laura's mom, states in an interview that Ashley Freeman used to work at a convenience store in Welsh, Oklahoma. Now, when investigators ask Sells how he knew the Freemans, he told them that he had seen Ashley at a convenience store and had followed her one night. I mean, it sounds like it's starting to add up, doesn't it? The OSBI and Craig County Sheriff pick up Sells, and they drive him around for approximately 3 hours. And each place they stop, Sells tells them, quote, no, not here, not there. This isn't the place, unquote. They finally come to a county road, and Sells says, quote, they're down here, unquote. So they turn down this road and get out and search the area for about 2 hours. And of course, they find nothing but decaying animal bones. I'm sorry, but if that were me at this point, I would be livid, and I would take his crazy ass right back to prison where he belongs. It was a wild goose chase for about 2 days is what it was. So they take him back for after coming up empty handed, and he ends up confessing and says to the officers, quote, you know what? I never had the bodies, and I just wanted some time away from my cell, unquote. What a bastard. You guys, the more cases I research with these serial killers, it seems it is a common thing for them to recant their statement, saying, yeah, I know who did it, or no, I did it myself, and then poof, nope, no, I have no idea what I'm talking about. It's insane. So he obtained every bit of intel he had of the Freemans and the Bible's case from newspapers. He didn't know shit. Late December of 2004, almost 5 years after the Freemans were murdered, the OSBI get an even bigger break in the case, and they feel this one is the grand slam. Now they have a man who police picked up in Miami, Oklahoma, which, yes, Miami, Oklahoma is a thing, but they also arrested him the same morning of the Freemans' house fire. Can you guess who it is? Remember, we are now in 2004, 5 years later. Can you guess it? Do you know? Okay, I'll tell you. It is none other than Jeremy freaking Jones. Do y'all remember Jeremy Jones from the Patrice Indris case? Well, guess what? He's back. What the actual heck? Now, if you are aware, if you were unaware of Jeremy Jones, please go back to episode 2, which is about the Patrice Indris case where he first comes up. She was a salon owner in Cummings, Georgia, who disappeared from the salon on April 15, 2004. But the investigators did find out or did find her body December 2005. Small freaking world, guys. Small freaking world. Anyway, so while in Mobile, Alabama, Jeremy Jones is confessing to her murder there. While discussing that case, he also confesses killing Patrice Indris, okay? And then proceeds to say to the investigators, hey, I've got some girls in Oklahoma I need to talk to you about. What? What is going on right now? When I first read this, I was in complete shock. This man is a whole damn mess. Huge ass mess. Jeremy Jones was from Ottawa County, Oklahoma, and had been arrested in Mobile, Alabama, as mentioned a moment ago. He was arrested for rape, murder, and you guessed it, arson. He was arrested and charged with capital murder for reportedly raping and killing a woman by the name of Lisa Marae Nichols. Now, it seems it is all starting to come together as far as his MO goes. We have a woman who was shot and murdered in a home that was burnt down. On top of that information, over the years since he has been away from Oklahoma, where he is originally from, he has been a prime suspect in multiple murders around the South. Again, we know firsthand. And from what we know about Patrice Indris' case, Jeremy was a huge drug dealer as well, particularly with methamphetamines. Captain Paul Birch of the Mobile, Alabama, was the arresting officer in the Lisa Nichols murder case. Jeremy Jones was arrested for Lisa Nichols' murder in September of 2004. Jones was documented as a rapist and being convicted of several rapes. He was asked to describe, to the best of his knowledge, his recollection of him walking into the Freeman's home during the interrogation. He said he went into the door, he went left, walked through the kitchen, going down the hallway to the master bedroom. Captain Birch then asks him, "Explain to me what you see." Jeremy proceeds, "I see two people in the bedroom, two shots with a shotgun to the head. I killed the man first because he is the strongest one in the house." He started to get confused somewhat and says, "The other person, I mean, there was no lights on. It was dark. I couldn't tell, yada, yada, yada." He continues, "The other person tries to get out of the bed and tries to get away from him." He says, "I jumped across the bed, tackled the person, and shot them." Now he talks about the fire. They said that he had told them that Coleman fuel was in the house on the kitchen table, and he went outside the house and was watching the fire for a minute. Then the girls came up. They come out running out of the house, scared to death. They didn't know what was going on, he says. "I didn't know they were in there." He said, "They see me and ask for help. I tell them to get in my truck," and apparently tells the girls, "We will go get help." He proceeds to say, "I get them in the truck and hold them at gunpoint and lock the door so they couldn't get out." He goes on more. He says, "I don't know what to do with them. I drove to Galena, Kansas, about 15, 20-minute drive." He gets them out of the truck and talks to them a moment and proceeds to tell them everything will be okay and shoots them, drags their bodies, and puts them in a hole. On January 6, 2005 is when they called the OSBI and told them what he had confessed to, which led to them driving to Alabama to interview him just like they did with Tommy Sells. OSBI agent at the time, Steve Nutter, asked Jones, "Why did you go out there?" Jones answers, quote, "I went out there to kill them because he owed me money," unquote. Now, when he said he, Jones, to me, was referring to Danny Freeman. Of course, he had only information a person who did the crime would have known, but you see, what the OSBI didn't realize was that old Jeremy Jones was pretty good at this. Now, I don't think it was ever 100% confirmed that Danny Freeman was involved in meth. There were talks of him selling it at one point, but again, nothing concrete. What we do know is that he was into marijuana. What is strange is that while investigators were looking into Jones's claims, they discovered that he was actually in the area of the Freeman's home on the same morning of the fire. Now, this is when he was arrested in Miami, Oklahoma, comes into play, which is approximately 15 to 20 minutes away from the Freeman home. It was documented that he was arrested for drug paraphernalia and public intoxication, and that was around 3:59 a.m. and was booked in the Ottawa County Jail before dawn on December 30th of 99. So, is it possible? Maybe, possibly. But Jeremy Jones now finally agrees to show investigators on a map exactly where he dumped Laura and Ashley's body in Galena, Kansas. Now, Galena, Kansas was said to be as one of the biggest mine states, with several thousands of underground mines all over northeast Oklahoma to Missouri, all the way into Kansas. According to Sheriff Jimmy Souter at the time, the underground mines stay at a constant 50 degrees. Quote, "If there were bodies in those mines, they would not be in as bad shape as you would think," unquote. The mines were anywhere from 300 to 350 feet back in the day, but now most of these mines are no deeper than 100 feet. The mines were searched for 2 days with no signs of the girls. So, of course, when investigators come up empty-handed, what do you know? Jeremy Jones recants all of his statements in reference to this case. And just like with Tommy Sells, they love attention. They like to stir the pot, if you will. I mean, come on, you're on death row for committing multiple murders. I guess they feel they need some kind of action somewhere. I don't know. I'm not a serial killer, but you get what I mean. On that note, it was confirmed that on November 29th, 2005, Jones is sentenced to death for the murder of Lisa Marie Nichols in Mobile, Alabama. And I've actually been following Jeremy Jones for a few weeks now, ever since the Patrice Indris case. And I learned that he also confessed and recanted with the Alabama case as well. I guess they ended up having more information and evidence to convict him for that particular case, but that's very interesting. So they didn't discount him altogether for the Freeman and Bible case, but let's just say they're keeping him at arm's length. With all that being said and done, fast forward to 2015 when social media started coming up. Laureen Bible decides to make a Facebook page to gather tips from anyone who knew anything. And an anonymous tip comes through that page that says you need to check out a man named Charlie Kreider. According to Dwayne, Danny's stepbrother, old Charlie Kreider was friends with Danny Freeman and had worked together over the years and had actually sold marijuana together. But the statement he told investigators about them growing marijuana together had not physically proven itself to be accurate. So Mr. Kreider is valuable to this case because in 2005, he was arrested for the murder of a woman named Judith Shrum, a woman who worked at the school where he worked as a school bus repairman. After that, Kreider was found guilty of second-degree murder in 2007 and was sentenced to 14 years in prison and was released in the spring of 2017. So the local investigators and OSBI conduct a search of the land where Kreider's home once stood. It was January 15, 2006 when that search was done. There was a specific well that was indicated that it maybe have been possible that the girls had been dumped in. So they dropped a camera down that well to continue the search. Once they finish the well, they dig up some of the surrounding land surrounding the area of the well again, and law enforcement finds no evidence of the girls either. Needless to say, Charles Kreider was not charged with any connection to this case whatsoever. This horror that these families are going through tip after tip, and they come up empty-handed every time. It's nuts, but moving on. So in 2016, Sheriff Souter runs for re-election, and the same issue occurs like with Sheriff Vaughn, in which the community is just pretty much fed up with the sheriff's office not coming together to find these missing girls. So he gets the boot and comes in Heath Winfrey, and he takes office in 2017 to present time. Sheriff Winfrey has been sheriff for an entire year. When this announcement comes out that they have obtained this mystery box that has a bunch of new notes and documents pertaining to the Freeman and Bible case that had been pushed aside and forgotten by the previous sheriff administration. These newly found documents have generated new leads with hundreds of witnesses. They believe this will shed new light on what had happened to the girls. Once Sheriff Winfrey got a hold of this box, he had it locked up in evidence and called the DA's office immediately. Now, these documents should have been sent in to the OSBI, but was never done. You know, more shady shit. But ultimately, this box could be the missing link to everything. Now, at this time, the initial OSBI agent, Steve Nutter, has retired, and they now have a new agent by the name of Tammy Ferrari. They are hoping with all the new investigators on the case, they will obtain more clarification on what had happened. So with all that being said, investigators began going over old leads with new witnesses speaking out and providing the OSBI with new tips. At the end of 2017 and beginning of 2018, with all these new leads coming in, they believe they have cracked the case, which was an 18-year-old case at the time. So on April 18th of 2018, there's a word of a huge development just 3 days later on April 21st of 18. Families and reporters gather at the courthouse awaiting the district attorney's announcement.
So Craig County District Attorney Matt Ballard. For 18 years, the community in Craig County, including many members of the media, have followed the case of the deaths of Danny and Kathy Freeman, the mysterious disappearance of their 16-year-old daughter, Ashley Freeman, and Ashley's friend, 16-year-old Laura Bible, and the arson of the Freeman family home. Yesterday, there was an arrest in the case. Today, charges were filed against Ronnie Dean Busick.
So according to Craig County District Attorney Matt Ballard, Mr. Busick was in action with two other perpetrators, who were identified as Phil Welsh and David A. Pennington. Per District Attorney Matt Ballard, Welsh and Pennington had died during the course of the investigation. As said in the affidavit, as well as the arrest warrant, Phil Welsh, David Pennington, and Ronnie Busick killed Kathy and Danny Freeman and abducted Ashley Freeman and Laura Bible and set fire to the Freeman home. More information was also filed in that affidavit that the girls were, in fact, kept alive for an unknown amount of days following the fire. The Polaroid photos of Laura and Ashley, along with their final days, were actually seen by multiple people, and all three of those men made statements to multiple people about these crimes during their lives. Ronnie Busick was 66 when he was arrested in 2018. It was reported that more than 12 people knew about these three men and knew about them bragging about their crimes, and no one said nothing. I don't know if people were scared of speaking up or what, but that is crazy. But it turns out that Busick had been in a Kansas jail since that February on a drug probation charge. So a little backstory on Philip Welsh. He is apparently from Erie, Kansas, and according to reports, no one really has anything nice to say about this man. Well, okay then. He seems to be a meth addict and extremely religious, which that part I don't understand. That's a great mix. A murderer, a meth head, and he's religious. Got it. And David Pennington was a roommate of Philip Welsh. From what I have researched, Pennington was the closest to Danny Freeman. Their paths more than likely could have crossed because they were both welders who moved around doing little jobs here and there. And of course, Ronnie Busick, when they question him, they state that he doesn't remember the girls, that his memory is a little hazy from the drugs, according to investigators. These three men were on the OSBI's radar, believe it or not. The families had heard their names fairly early on as well. But what I don't understand is why it took them 18 years to finally charge Busick. Heck, if they would have been more on top of this case from the get-go, they could have arrested all three of these men together. But as a result of that, they are only able to charge one. I was able to research and find the affidavit on this case. You guys, it is a 29-page affidavit. Crazy. In the affidavit, it states that many of these witnesses tried going to sheriff's office and the OSBI to give them information, but it seemed no one would listen. As I'm looking through this affidavit, it seems that these witnesses are documented with initials instead of their full names so they could remain anonymous, which of course I totally get 100%. One witness with the initials L.E., which I assume is an ex-girlfriend, stated, I believe of Pennington, but I'm not 100% sure, states that Pennington threatened this witness and said, quote, he would do to her that what he had done to those girls, unquote. This witness was interviewed back in 2016. Initials C.E., which was a former associate of Welch, stated Welch would call and threaten to kill C.M. and her children and throw them into a pit with the missing girls. And then they discuss an insurance car that had been found apparently in the first days after the Freeman fire. Two private investigators were hired by, I believe it was Dwayne, which was Danny's stepbrother. He hired the two PIs and they found a insurance card for a vehicle near the crime scene on the Freeman property that didn't belong to anyone living at the home. In a documentary of this case, Dwayne stated that the two PIs he hired went to the OSBI and tried giving them the insurance card and they immediately brushed it off and said that the card didn't have anything to do with this case. To me, this is very, very valuable information to be taken into consideration, like 100%. I mean, the card didn't belong to anyone who lived at the property. Therefore, someone was there that clearly did not belong. With the OSBI discarding this information, the PIs decided to take matters into their own hands and follow up on this lead. According to the affidavit, they learned that the card belonged to a woman living in Pitcher, Oklahoma. But when the car was tracked down, they found it had been sent to a salvage yard. And in the affidavit, it states that the vehicle was dismissed because it had gone through too many hands to be processed. Which I get maybe a tad bit, okay, sure, but not to follow up with the information on the vehicle at all is a little nuts. Clearly it meant something. Since the new OSBI agent considered about it being 18 years later, I mean, I'm no detective, but I'm just saying. The woman with the insurance card was said to be EB in the affidavit documents and says that she was dating Philip Welch at the time of the murders. In the report, Welch indicated that EB moved in with him, and soon after the murder of the Freeman family, law enforcement officers had spoken to him and EB about EB's insurance card found near the crime scene. Welch reported that he had cleaned out EB's vehicle approximately 1 month earlier and had remembered seeing insurance card in the glove box, and goes on to say that Welch reported he did not know why the insurance card was removed from the vehicle or why it was found near the crime scene at all. So, from what it seems like to me, that line of questioning ended there. They said they didn't kill anyone, so that was that. And of course, the OSBI agent at the time, the insurance card was the first presented to Steve Nutter, and to this day has not responded to any requests for clarification on why his agency dismissed the insurance card in the first place, which to me, he should not have. The authorities reported that the girls were actually held hostage for 7 days before the three men killed them. Now, about these Polaroid pictures I spoke about. These photos were of the girls tied up and gagged. TW, which is the initials of a former girlfriend of Philip Welch, reported that she had seen several Polaroid pictures of the girls, which Welch kept in his soft leather briefcase. The documents TW was certain the girls in the Polaroids were the same two girls that were reported missing. L.E. explained the photos to be of the two girls bound and gagged, lying on the bed facing each other and looking to be emaciated. L.E. stated one of them bragged about taking pictures of the girls tied up and reported all three molested the girls as well. R.H., an acquaintance of Ronnie Busick, stated afterwards that Busick started running his mouth about his involvement in the Freeman murders along with the missing girls. R.H. stated again Busick told him how the girls were tied up in a trailer house in Pitcher where they were raped and tortured. R.H. stated Busick said the girls were kept alive for several days.
My niece is at?
I wish I could. I don't have food.
part in it? Huh? Are you afraid to admit what you've done?
So that was a little news clip that I had found. I know it's a little hard to hear, but basically it was Dwayne asking him what he did with his nieces. He said he didn't know. And then a news reporter asked him if he was scared to say his part in it, which he replied, "I didn't do nothing." Shortly after Busick was arrested, David Pennington's stepdaughter, Jerry Shelton, reached out to Laura's mom through that Facebook page that we mentioned in part one. She explains in this documentary that David, her stepfather, had a drug problem dealing with meth. He apparently cooked and sold meth as well. She also goes to say that her father knew Danny Freeman and stated she had actually been to the Freeman home as a kid. So reading more of this affidavit, they interview Busick in the summer of 2017. Busick maintains, as he did in the earlier interviews, that he does not know where the girls are other than he heard that they might be in a mine shaft near the Pitcher, near Pitcher, Oklahoma. Now, Pitcher is about a two-minute drive from the Welsh area where the Freemans had lived. Despite the arrest of Ronnie Busick, they still to this day have not found the bodies of Ashley Freeman and Laura Bible. According to an article from the Tulsa News posted on July 2020, entered a guilty plea deal. Now, 68-year-old Ronnie Busick originally faced a first-degree murder charge and admitted withholding information in the case and pled guilty of one count of accessory to murder in the first degree. The defendant also entered a plea agreement to help investigators find the girl's remains. The current sentence is 15 years in prison, said Isaac Shields as an assistant district attorney in the Gregg County. If Busick helps them find the remains of the girls before August 31st, which we know now has passed, then Busick would serve 5 years in prison and 5 years on probation. Quote, he'll go to prison, do his time. If he lives long enough, he'll get to be released. But for us, we still don't have the girls, said Laureen Bible. That was recently in an article as well. As of September 1st, 2020, a judge had sentenced Busick to 10 years in prison with 5 years probation for his involvement in the disappearance of Ashley and Laura, and no remains have been found to this day. My heart simply aches for the families of these beautiful girls. 21 years have gone by, and they still have no idea where those men disposed of their bodies. I have a strong hope that their bodies will be found and return home so the families can finally have closure. If you are listening and know anything about this case or where the girls could be, please go to tips@osbi.ok, which is for the Oklahoma.gov, or call 1-800-522-8017 or find Laura Bible Facebook page. You guys, that is a wrap for part two of episode four. I'm so glad you guys hung out with me. But let me tell you, next episode is going to be pretty good. Let me tell you why. Your girl's got her first serial killer or recanter. I don't know. Can you guess? You just have to wait and see. Bye, guys. Again, thank you guys so much for hanging out with me. I am so blessed and so thankful that you guys are tuning in and sending me little messages and comments. I love you guys so much. I greatly, greatly appreciate it. But yeah, let's go ahead and get started talking. Meet me back at the Facebook page, Makeup and Murder, or Instagram page, Makeup and Murder Podcast, or hey, even find my personal page, Carly Jones, on Facebook, or Carly with a K on Instagram. And yeah, that's it. Stay tuned for the next episode. See you guys later. Peace.